How about some observations from another man of the ABC News team? We take you now to Chicago and Paul Harvey.
Good evening, Americans. We are just never ready for this kind of thing in this country. We deplore the hotheads elsewhere in the world who change governments with guns, but we try to ignore the fact that now four of our own presidents have been cut down by assassins. It had been such a tremendous welcome at the Dallas airport and all along the parade route that Mrs. Kennedy, who had become perhaps his greatest political asset, turned to her husband and said, "You can't say Dallas wasn't friendly to you." Moments later, in the back seat of that open car, she cradled her husband's bleeding head in her arms, saying, "Oh no, oh no." Top speed, it was still 5 minutes to Parkland Hospital. Mrs. Kennedy did not collapse, no hysteria. When she entered the hospital, her chic fuchsia suit was covered with her husband's blood. President Kennedy, within 30 minutes, was dead from a bullet in his brain. There was another wound in the president's neck, which could have been from the same bullet. Mrs. Kennedy's wish was to return to Washington immediately to be with the children. The bullets, by now you know, came from a warehouse window. On the fifth floor, police found the remains of some fried chicken and some paper. The assassin had waited there for some time. And a Mauser rifle with a scope sight. Three cartridges fired, one still in the chamber. Dallas policemen advised that a suspect had entered a theater in the Riverside section, chased him there. There was a shootout. One policeman was killed. The suspect was captured, Lee H. Oswald, 24. They dragged him from the theater screaming. Evidence is piling up against him. He was employed in the building where the murder weapon was found. Lee H. Oswald traveled in Russia in 1959, married a Russian woman, renounced his American citizenship, tried to apply for Russian citizenship. That's significant, killed by extreme right-wing elements. Now it develops the assassin's allegiance was red. He wore a brown shirt, uniform of a Castro communist terrorist, and he, Lee Oswald, is chairman of the pro-Castro outfit called the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Governor Connally, with a bullet through his back that came out his chest, fractured his wrist, underwent surgery. He is conscious, condition good. Vice President Johnson, who was riding in a separate car a considerable distance behind Kennedy's, was unhurt. Lyndon Johnson is now President of the United States. Within less than 2 hours of the president's death, aboard the presidential plane in Dallas, Johnson took the oath of office sworn in by a woman judge and then took off with the widow and the body for Washington. When the first news came today, before it was even confirmed that the president had been killed, a flood of sell orders hit the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. They rang the bell, closed down for the day, but before they could, industrials had plummeted $21. And the commodity exchanges closed down, and Congress recessed, and sporting events most everywhere scheduled for tonight are canceled. Pope Paul, advised, went to his private chapel to pray. General Douglas MacArthur, in a telegram to Mrs. Kennedy tonight, said, quote, "I realize the utter futility of words at such a time, but as a former comrade in arms, his death kills something within me." President's special car has a bulletproof bubble glass top, but the top was down today so that he could wave to the enthusiastic crowds. The Dallas reception was the most enthusiastic of any stop in Texas. For weeks, a big debate raged over who of the city's luminaries would get to sit at the head table this noon. Nobody did. And on the president's White House desk tonight are the calls and the callers and the documents and the urgent things to be done which could not possibly await his attention for another day. But they will wait now. It is for us that one must grieve tonight. For a generation which has so refined its intellect that it can split atoms and communicate with the moon, and yet remains at the mercy of its own undisciplined emotions. If the world is one day destroyed, it'll come just like this, you know. It'll not be the H-bomb that did it. It'll be the greed or the fear or the hate that set it off. Paul Harvey, good night.
ABC, Chicago.
This Governor John Connally of Texas, also wounded by a sniper who killed the president. He's listed as in very serious condition, but his condition not critical. He was wounded in the right arm, the right leg, and the back, with apparently the bullet that went into his back lodging in his chest. Governor Connally of Texas reported in satisfactory condition at the hospital. There's late word in Washington. For that report, let's go to Andrews Air Force Base and ABC's Bill Downs.
This is Bill Downs at Andrews Air Force Base. Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield of Montana just told ABC News that the new President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson, has called a cabinet meeting and a meeting of the majority of the congressional leadership, both Republicans and Democrats, at the White House this evening at 8 o'clock. Details of what will be discussed, of course, are not known here, as this restive, saddened crowd at Andrews Air Force Base awaits the arrival of the ex-president and the new president of the United States. This is Bill Downs at Andrews Air Force Base.
Now, some members of the cabinet will not be able to attend the meeting called by President Johnson tonight. The plane carrying Secretary of State Dean Rusk and five Kennedy cabinet members was en route to Tokyo when the report was received on the radio of the president's death. The plane turned around immediately. It landed at Honolulu, was refueled. It's now heading back to Washington. That plane has aboard five of the cabinet members and Secretary of State Dean Rusk. The White House says that the Kennedy children have not been told of their father's death. Caroline was almost six. John Jr., nearly three. They're in the White House with their nurse, Miss Maud Shaw. Sources say it's assumed that Mrs. Kennedy will return to the executive mansion this evening after she lands, and it'll be she who, by the sad duty of telling the children of their father's tragic death. Also in the White House, Sergeant Shriver, brother-in-law of the president. He's working with military officials to make the funeral arrangements, which will then be passed on to Mrs. Kennedy for final decision. Senator Edward Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts and Eunice Shriver, the brother and sister of the late president, they have flown up to Hyannisport, Massachusetts to be with their mother, late president's father, Joseph P. Kennedy, and Mrs. Rose Kennedy. The only other great English-speaking nation in the world, Great Britain, feeling a special shock at the assassination of President Kennedy. We have Bill Sheehan on circuit in London. Bill?
Well, Prime Minister Sir Alec Douglas Hume expressed his profound shock and horror at the death of President Kennedy. He was on his way to the country to spend the weekend and returned immediately to number 10 Downing Street, where you'll be hearing his message on a special BBC tribute within 5 minutes from now. He'll spend the rest of the weekend at number 10 Downing Street. Besides his public message of grief, Sir Alec has sent a personal message to Mrs. Kennedy. There's a traffic jam on Fleet Street. London's newspaper Row now is the first of the Saturday morning papers are going on street sale. Shocked motorists and pedestrians vying for the first details of the tragedy that leaves London in disbelief. Over the years, there's been in Britain some criticism over security precautions that surround an American president when he travels. The grim reality of the danger is almost impossible to digest tonight. In front of the U.S. Embassy at Grosvenor Square, Americans flocked first by the dozens and then by the scores until there are hundreds outside there now. One man explained earlier, it sounds sentimental, but at this moment I wanted to get as close as possible to home. ABC's Bruce Morton was outside the embassy, and Bruce describes the scene.
At first the crowd milled around in the darkness, and when I got there, for a while I had to answer questions instead of ask them. How, when, where, and most of all, just was it really true, really true? Finally, more and more lights came on in the big building, and the crowd moved inside to sign letters of condolence, to grab and pass from hand to hand torn bits of wire service copy telling about the assassination. Some of them were crying. One American said, I was in a movie theater. They were showing From Here to Eternity, the part where they attack Pearl Harbor. The screen went dead during the attack, and they announced the news. I came over to see what I could find out. Over half the crowd was English, like the lady who said over and over again, it's like losing a friend, someone you know. And like the taxi driver who first asked me if I was American and then said simply, I'm sorry.
Sir Winston Churchill said, this monstrous act has taken from us a great statesman and a wise and valiant man. The loss to the United States and to the world is incalculable. Those who come after Mr. Kennedy, said Mr. Churchill, must strive the more to achieve the ideals of world peace and human happiness and dignity to which his presidency was dedicated. Harold Wilson, the Labor Party leader, was about to address a rally near Manchester when he was told the news. He informed the people who had come to hear him speak and asked them to join him in a silent tribute. He said, "I pay tribute to one who has been a great friend of this country. His struggle for racial equality in the United States is something that, in memory, will long outlive his life." Former Prime Minister Harold Macmillan, who was President Kennedy's host last June and who had the highest respect for his young colleague, was stunned. Lord Attlee, the Labor Prime Minister after World War II, recalled his meeting with the President 2 years ago and deplored the terrible tragedy. The Queen received a telephone message. She was staying in the country outside London for the weekend. She sent a personal message to the family. The text hasn't been released as yet. The news of the President's death hit London at 7:30 local time. The BBC made the announcement, and then a long silence ensued on the radio, broken by an announcer who apologized for the delay, explaining, "We need a moment to collect ourselves." And then a musical interlude followed. Just about 10 seconds from now, BBC television and commercial television are broadcasting a tribute to the late President. Taking part will be Prime Minister Sir Alec Douglas Hume and Harold Wilson, the leader of the opposition. Here is that BBC tribute.
Tonight, less than 5 hours ago, President Kennedy was shot down in a Texas street and died almost immediately. He died in a week which saw the 100th anniversary of one of the climactic moments in American history, the Battle of Gettysburg. The man whose words made Gettysburg immortal, Abraham Lincoln, also died by an assassin's bullet. But if the murder of Lincoln was a disaster for America, the murder of John Kennedy is a disaster for the whole free world. Kennedy had been president for a little under 3 years. He had his disappointments. He had his failures. He didn't achieve all that he wanted in improving the life of the American people. But often with his wife at his side, he caught the imagination of the world, the first of a new generation of leaders. And John Kennedy took his place in history during 1 week just over a year ago, the week of Cuba. When the world came to its first nuclear confrontation, for Kennedy it brought the most searching moments of decision ever laid on one human being. What happened in that week has been told many times. Kennedy showed not only nerve, but judgment. He first forced Khrushchev to back down, but he did not humiliate him. He used the lesson of Cuba not to intensify the Cold War, but to open new prospects of easing world tension. And now for tributes to President Kennedy from the leaders of our own country, first the Prime Minister, Sir Alec Douglas Hume.
There are times in life when mind and heart stand still, and one such is now, and all of you will have felt, as I did, that everything in one cried out in protest at the news that President Kennedy was dead at the hand of the assassin. This young, gay, and brave statesman, killed in the full vigor of his manhood, when he bore on his shoulders all the cares and the hopes of the world. You will be glad to know that Her Majesty the Queen has sent a message to Mrs. Kennedy and the people of the United States on behalf of you all, and I know now do so on behalf of Her Majesty's government, and I know that all in both Houses of Parliament will allow me, as they are not sitting, to do so on behalf of them too. This moment is the more poignant because only a few weeks ago I was walking with President Kennedy in the grounds of the White House, and he was telling me of his plans to guard and to keep the peace of the world. And as I recall his vivid presence, he lives in my mind as a man who, first of all, was a man of peace and a man with a deep religious faith which was dedicated to healing the divisions between men. And then, as a man of physical courage, as you know, he was a casualty in the war, and very often in pain. But he was a man who was determined that this curse of war should never scourge mankind again if he could do anything to arrest the dangers. And one, two, who of course had in his power and in his hand such power as had never been given before in the history of man to a mortal man. And he used it always for high purpose and always to make the world a better place and a safer place for ordinary men and women to live in. And then again, I recall him as a just man, a man who hated bigotry, a man who believed that all men were equal in the sight of God and acted on that belief. And then a man who, as a husband and a father, was tolerant and human, and as a politician, was a statesman who grasped all the opportunities that he had and looked forward with an imagination rare in a man of his years. In 3 short years of his presidency, he left an indelible mark on his country and on the world. And for us in Britain, his loss is a deep and a sad one, because he was the most loyal and faithful of allies.
You have been listening to a tribute on the British Broadcasting Corporation radio and television to President Kennedy, and you heard the voice of Sir Alec Douglas Hume, the new British Prime Minister.